Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin. Well, Johnny Gleason, our Genesee County Clerk and Register of Deeds, will be joining us a little later. He does not have an Irish blessing this year, but he does have a lot to say about the Flint water crisis and who he believes may be responsible and what should be done with them. But before we get to that interview, the legislature has 2 weeks to address the Detroit Public Schools issue, or else Judge Rhodes, who is now the transition manager down at Detroit Public Schools, said they will no longer have the money to pay their teachers. Abigail Walls, you were covering that hearing for us. And when he kind of laid out that time frame, did it click with lawmakers, or what was their reaction?
I think people are still feeling there's some confusion over when the district is going to run out of money. Judge Rhodes has said that the last paycheck where teachers can expect to work and still get paid is April 8th, and then the district will start running negative numbers on April 28th. State Treasurer Nick Corey has said that the district will run out of money by May, so it seems like we're starting to see some coalescing around dates and timelines for Detroit.
Now, there has been an aggressive House appropriations schedule in regards to this Detroit Public Schools issue. So obviously they realize that this is a front burner issue. Do you get a sense that members are starting to kind of get their head around why they're there and why this is such a big problem?
Representative Pasholka, chairman of the subcommittee, was saying that in the legislature there is no doubt that they're going to get supplemental passed, that we're not going to let Detroit Public Schools shut down before the end of the school year. It's a little different than we've been hearing from Speaker Cotter's office about the bankruptcy still being on the table for the district, though we'll see what comes out.
All right, so just to be clear with our listeners here, the House and Senate are taking a look at $50 million, either a supplemental, some think it could be a loan, but I don't know, does it really matter in the end, Lauren, whether it's a loan or whether we're just going to go ahead and give them money? Because we're just paying ourselves back anyway, right? I mean, it's the state that has been loaning DPS this money all along.
Right. And it's definitely, you know, going to continue being an issue regardless of what time frame it is, or whether it's a supplemental, or whether they're able to get it done in this 2 weeks here. The Senate has obviously been working on this for quite some time. Senator Hansen, there's some optimism that it could get done before spring break, but at every other step in the process, it's taken a little bit longer to get these incremental steps done. Even the bills, we waited for months to see a copy of the legislation that they were putting forward. So they're working on it, but it's a lengthy process here.
So here we have the House and the Senate are working kind of concurrently. It wasn't supposed to be that way at first, but now it is. It's kind of basically a race to see who can get something done first. That kind of speaks to how important this is, doesn't it?
Yeah, certainly. It's definitely, as I think you mentioned, a front burner issue. And no one is denying that at this point. It's just getting the bits and pieces together.
Why is this so hard, John?
It's Detroit, and it's debt, and it's, you know, coming up with extra money and whatever you want to call it. There's a perception among outstate lawmakers that this is a Detroit problem. The Detroit ought to solve it. But the problem is it hasn't been a Detroit district in a long time, and that's what Detroit will argue. And politically, though, Republicans really have to. This is not something you can let go into bankruptcy. I think they're running the risk of creating a very, very bad narrative by the end of the year if they let this go. I mean, look, this is the Republican-controlled state government that brought you Flint, that brought you Legionnaires' disease, that now has allowed the largest school district, the largest minority school district in the state, to go bankrupt and not live up to the responsibilities of dealing with the debt, even though the state has run the district for over a decade. So it's going to happen.
And Judge Rhodes' roundtable, after he spoke to the House committee, pointed out that there is an inherent cost in letting Detroit public schools go dark, stay dark, and having to restart that I think, you know, legislators may have to own up to if there's a higher incurred cost shutting down the district.
There are a lot of dollars being thrown around in regards to what the debt is, how much it's going to cost to actually get Detroit Public Schools back on its feet. Here's some numbers I wanted to share because this just adds even more cost on top of it. So we have a debt of what, $525 million? We've heard that number tossed around. The Skillman Foundation last year commissioned a report to find out how much it would actually cost, how much more investment would it cost to help get Detroit Public Schools back on its feet to help turn around the performance of its students. They had a number of $274 million over 10 years. So you've got that number. And I think that the $715 million that Governor Snyder is asking for is part of this, right? So this is $274 million over 10 years. Well, then we get into just fixing the school buildings. And they projected $775 million just to get the school buildings to a minimum quality standard. $775 million just to get to the minimum, and an additional $575 million to, quote, modernize the school buildings. Now, obviously, when you start talking about infrastructure, John, I mean, that starts sniffing bond proposal, but holy cow. I mean, these numbers are adding up real fast.
It's just like with the talk we've had with the water systems. The size of the Detroit school system is large. It's outdated. That's just an amazing number you just threw out there.
Lauren, so obviously we got to get the 725 or whatever the governor has put on the table. And then, you know, somehow, some way they've got to start addressing the buildings, because that's why the Detroit public school teachers are not showing up, in large part.
Right.
And their salaries are not good.
Well, yeah. And there's so many factors that play into how Detroit public schools got here. But yes, the infrastructure is a critical issue that needs to be addressed to even bring even the minimum, like the bare minimum. I think a lot of lawmakers are just shocked that it was allowed to get this far. And regardless of who did it, you know, there's a sense like, wow, this is a bigger issue than we originally thought here.
Now, later this week, the governor is going to be in Washington, D.C., Abigail, and he's going to talk about the Flint water situation. We'll go ahead and switch gears over to that. He's going to be testifying the same day as the EPA director, Gina McCarthy. We got Darnell Early testifying on Tuesday. Why do you think they scheduled it that way?
You could say it's just how the schedule worked out, but knowing that Representative Chavetz runs a pretty tough committee, I think what we're going to see here is everyone's going to have opportunity to go after Early, and then we'll see a lineup with Gina McCarthy, head of the EPA, and Governor Snyder, and you'll see the Democrats on the committee get their red meat out of having the governor there. And it's no secret in Congress that Republicans don't like the EPA, so here's their opportunity.
So here's a question for you guys. What are the odds that one of the people who testifies, if not two or maybe multiple people, have to end up pleading the fifth on this issue? I mean, it's something to think about anyway, right? I mean, who knows where this goes, but we do have at least two active criminal investigations going on right now with the Attorney General and the U.S. Attorney's Office.
I don't know that you'll see anybody go totally silent through the entire committee. It may be much like when we saw Mary Barra with GM going selectively dark on questions that, you know, could interfere with an investigation.
Right. Yeah, I'm not talking about an entire interview just completely shut down, but because I think both Governor Snyder and Darnell Early have had messages and they've got their stories that they want to tell and their chain of events.
Yeah.
But there could be some fastballs that are thrown at them that may get a little tight inside, you know what I mean? May want to check your swing on those.
I have a feeling they're being prepared pretty extensively for these.
Why is he doing this? I mean, I guess he's being asked to by Congress, but he almost kind of has to, doesn't he, Lauren? I mean, it looks horrid if he doesn't.
Yeah, I think at this point, if he doesn't do it, he has a message that you mentioned that he needs to get out there. If he doesn't do it, it will just pile on to just the mountain of criticisms that he's been getting and his administration has been getting for the handling of this crisis. So at the very least, he can come forward and he'll probably get criticized for whatever he says on that stand, because that's where we're at this point in the conversation. But at least he's out there, he's doing something. He's not just taking it. He's not just like letting it go silent.
And I think if the governor is absent, it takes pressure off of other parts of government that probably should be held accountable for their own fit. But, you know, if you have this vacuum of information from the governor's office, you aren't able to apply as much pressure to other parts of government that ostensibly failed.
One other thing that I wanted to add here, we've got late Friday a press release from the governor's office asking for the Auditor General and the auditor within the Department of Health and Human Services to investigate the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, I got to say, this is one of the strangest things that I've seen, to have a sitting governor ask a legislative body, which is the Auditor General, which is under the auspices of the legislature, investigate himself. This has to be some type of CYA in regards to some type of criminal or civil investigation or something. I mean, to have a governor ask somebody else to investigate himself is just bizarre.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting because the criticism has largely been on the DEQ at this point. But that department has also, you know, had its paws on this issue for a long time, you know, as a lot of the criticism has been focused on the DEQ's response, denial, denial, denial. But then they were also using these numbers from DHHS that were eventually applied differently. And then they're just, you know, the state was in a bind there. So it is interesting that, you know, the focus is now shifting to another state department that probably should have known better.
Probably just pure speculation here, but probably has a connection with Legionnaires' disease, I would guess. I don't know that, but kind of looks like where things are going as far as its connection and working with Genesee County. That was what the press release said, so we can only imagine that this is an issue of why they weren't on top of this Legionnaires' disease a little sooner. All right, let's move on to the next part of the podcast.
Joining us on the other end of the line is the clerk and register of deeds from Genesee County, John Gleason. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Top of the morning. How you been, Kyle?
Oh, I'm great. You know, and we know it's St. Patrick's Day, or it's getting real close when we have John Gleason on. Pleasure to have you on, but boy, there's more going on than corned beef and cabbage in Genesee County and Flint, isn't there?
You come by our party today, and I promise you one thing. You won't have to worry about the water.
I wanted to get kind of your perspective. You're close to the Flint situation, but maybe not intimately involved in this. How do you feel the city, the county, and the state has done in addressing this Flint water crisis?
I think they have been negligent even since the moment they took it seriously. I believe we could do much more. It seems like we've exasperated the problem. We must have 6 million plastic water bottles in this nice city now, and what's going to happen with those and where are they going to go? I know we have implemented a recycling program, but I don't think you're going to see much recycling of those bottles myself. And I'm concerned. I know that as a county, we could have done much more. The chairman of the board and the vice chair, I'm told by several people in town that they delayed the declaration of emergency when Mayor Weaver was elected. She was very aggressive, as most people have seen, and she went to the county to get that declaration, and the county said, I'll see you next year. So it wasn't until January 4th of 2016 that the county actually gave that nice mayor the declaration she was clamoring for, actually. We should have done more as a county.
Okay, so as a county, you think you all have been negligent. How about the state? How do you think the state has reacted to this?
Poorly. I'm concerned. I hear the excuses that Snyder didn't know about the water situation. I think I might have forwarded you a letter that I sent to him on September 10th of 2014 that we had an issue here. That I thought, I'm not a big fan on these water bottles. I'm grateful people want to be benevolent, but I think it's counterproductive. I know you take whatever you get when you're in a crisis, but on September 10th of 2014, I sent the note to Snyder that I thought was much more responsible, that we use the water tankers, they're called water buffaloes, that's the name that the military give them, water buffaloes that can hydrate thousands of troops. I thought we'd be better served if we would just drive the truck up and down the streets instead of millions of water bottles. I never even got an answer back. I sent it in 14, because we didn't get any answer. I sent it again in 2015.
And basically you were telling the governor that the water down here is poor.
Well, yeah, because I was concerned. You know, in the letter I noted that, you know, there was a boil in the water advisory. You must be very cautious. I'm a Boy Scout. I'm on the Boy Scout Executive Board. You just can't boil water and think that you're going to get rid of some of the components of that water. And after several months, now they're saying, look, don't boil the water. You compress the lead. The parts per billion is more compressed if you boil the water with the evaporation and heating the lead up is worse than if it was not at the heated temperature. Now we have billboards across the county saying, don't boil the water. Well, for several months, too many months, we told the public to boil it. So there are many things that have conflicted the recovery.
As far as the county office building goes, what kind of water do you guys drink? Do you just drink regular city water?
You know what a black and tan is? Speaking of Irish, you know what a black and tan is?
Oh, of course I do.
All right. Good Irish. It's a health drink, right?
Yeah, for some people it's a health drink.
stout, half lager, right?
Yep.
Half a can.
Yep.
Very popular in Ireland. That's what our water looks like coming out of our tap even today. I worked on a sewage treatment plant that services the Flint River. Believe it or not, this is so ironic that we're talking about this today. In October of 1976, I quit my job at the sewage treatment plant and went to Ireland. Can you believe it? 40 years ago this year, I was working at the sewage treatment plant and quit that job and took a trip to Ireland. For 6 weeks, I was over in Ireland that trip. So I've worked on a sewage treatment plant. I worked on the water treatment. I worked on that one. I worked on one in Owosso in Shiawassee County. When they started murmuring about switching to Flint River water, I immediately bought the 5-gallon water dispensers. We have those in my office. I would never let my workers even consider drinking that water.
So when did you bring in the 5-gallon dispensers?
Early on, I'd say 2014, maybe the end of 13, we brought them in when they were first talking that foolishness about turning that river on.
So you had red flags going up immediately when they were talking about Flint River water.
Absolutely. No question. I mean, mostly because of my work history. There's two questions that I think that needs to be asked. I wish somebody in Congress in the next few days or somebody would ask two important questions. Who was the individual responsible for putting the ingredients? We know what ingredients they were told to put in the water system, but who was the individual that actually put the ingredients in? Who put the treatment in the water system? And the second question I'd like to ask, because I've heard too many times now that local personalities were the ones that selected Darnell Early to be the financial manager, that the governor acquiesced to local politicians so that they could handpick who the financial manager was. So tell me who was putting the ingredients in the water and tell me who Snyder received his advice from on Darnell Early. Snyder could care less, I believe. I believe he could care less who the financial manager was. So he had to listen to somebody back home here and say, pick Early, that would be my guess. So those are questions I wish someone would ask. I'd really be interested in those two answers.
Do you believe that there's criminal implications here?
Yes, absolutely. No question.
And who do you think, and where are your suspicions?
Well, I think it is absolutely in the city. It's their water system. Just because if I'm in a car and somebody commits a robbery or unfortunately a murder, I'm considered an accomplice. I am treated harshly by the justice system, too. That's why I think they really have to dig. I wish they'd dig backwards and find out, okay, who was every treatment plant in the world has a chemist that works on site. They wear the nice white lab coat, and somebody was putting, there's enough negligence here. I'm concerned that where does it end? The lawsuits. I see Figer, $150 million, another attorney, $100 million, Val Washington, $30 million. There's a lot of millions that are going to be adjudicated. But absolutely, somebody in Flint, I think, needs to go to jail.
What about at the state level?
I'm not familiar with it since, I left January 1 of 13. I came back to the county here, so I really can't speak to that. I know that's why I think it's important. Who gave us Early? Who returned Early? I think it is critically important that we had three financial managers in the sequence that they served. Darnell Early was the city manager for Woodrow Stanley 20 years ago. Then we got in financial straits and they brought in Ed Kurtz. And then they brought in Mike Brown. Mike Brown was both the city manager and the mayor both. None of those three could come back. So they changed the public act. The citizens of the state voted overwhelmingly, no, we're not going to change the financial manager law. Snyder and his minions decided to change the law. And then years later, here comes Kurtz back again for the second cycle, Mike Brown back for the second cycle, and Darnell Early back for his second cycle. If they didn't change PA1, these financial managers could not have served. I gave a floor speech. When I was in the Senate, I said, Mike Brown has to go because he's not compliant with the public act for a financial manager. He was here before. He can't come back. But Snyder appointed him and kept him in there until all the machinations of the legislative process were implemented. But I'm concerned why he retreaded these. And that's why I believe strongly that there's personalities that handpicked Kurtz, that handpicked Brown, and handpicked Darnell Early. The governor needs to reveal who here locally advocated for these financial managers. He could have picked whoever he wanted, but he was not compliant. He literally broke state law. He broke it, and he must have broke it intentionally when he reassigned these financial managers.
How did he break state law?
Because you could not return as a financial manager
if you
served in the community before. But three different times he broke it. I gave a very, you know me, you watch me, I gave a very animated speech, floor speech, that Mike Brown had to go, that he couldn't be our financial manager. But the governor and the Republican senators and Republican House members didn't seem concerned with that.
There was one other thing I wanted to ask you here, and you mentioned that you think that they broke other laws. Is there anything in particular that you want to highlight on that?
Well, I don't think you poison tens of thousands of people without somebody being at fault. This is literally a man-made poisoning. Some person poisoned these people. Somebody made the shots that poisoned these people. This was man-made. This is not an accident. This is not a natural disaster. This was an administrative fiasco.
One other thing I wanted to get to here as far as the switch to the Karagandhi water source or the switch to it. Do you feel that that was all done on the up and up?
No, it couldn't have been. You wouldn't have poisoned tens of thousands of people if it had been on the up and up. First of all, from very limited information I have, it seems like it was rushed. Very rushed. What I see is personalities that were actually, openly clamoring for the switch. Eric Mays, who's on the city council, now he's thinking everybody in the world has a conspiracy. He was literally circulating petitions to use the Flint River water while he was running for the city council. He said this, and I will quote him, Mr. Mays said, this is going to get me elected to the city council, the Flint River water. And so now the folks that were clamoring to break away from the county for whatever reason. Now there's some of the loudest voices saying we've been harmed. Well, I think Eric Mays has to make things straight with his maker. There was nobody more animated in this city than Eric Mays about going to the Flint River.
And what about the water commissioner and his desire to want to go to that different water source?
Anybody that said go to the Flint River water did not have a clue what they were talking about. They were uninformed, and I think negligent. And those are the people in my mind that need to go before a judge. Whoever made the decision to use the Flint River water needs to stand in front of a judge.
And again, that was just from your experience doing sewage treatment in the past, that the Flint River water just wasn't an adequate source to be getting municipal drinking water from.
You know, the people really aren't asking the right questions. They're asking several important ones, but not necessarily the right ones. When we have a flood, when we have a rain, potentially even today, when you have the thaw and the rainbow, the treatment plant does not have the capacity to treat that water. So they just turn that sewage, that raw sewage, loose.
And it goes into the river.
Many, many storms throughout the year, they just turn that raw sewage loose into that river because there's not the capacity at the treatment facility.
And that goes right into the river.
Yeah, they just use the overflow mechanism to put it right back in the river. I mean millions of gallons, millions.
John Gleason, he is the clerk of Genesee County. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Hey, listen, behave yourself. I want to see that green tie on Thursday.
It'll be on. Thanks.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Lauren and John, Abigail, and our Genesee County Clerk and Register of Deeds, John Gleason. Well, it is St. Patrick's Day week.
It is.
And our resident Irish woman, Lauren Gibbons, is in full celebratory mood. She's even wearing green pants, and it's only Monday.
It is only Monday, but March is Irish American History Month, so it's the entire month of March that we can celebrate Irish culture and heritage.
And as you can tell by the music, I've hauled out the Irish music for the podcast.
This is an ideal way to go. And as any MERS supporter will tell you, we started the Irish music listening on Friday, and that will continue throughout the week here, I think.
Abigail, unfortunately, you weren't here last year when Lauren did a little a jig on the hardwood floor.
Treble reel.
Was that what it was?
It was a treble reel. A jig is with a soft shoe.
Okay, so a jig is with soft shoes, and a
Tremble reel is what I did on the podcast. That's my favorite, personally. It's hard shoes. It's a little exciting and fast. If you've seen Riverdance or Lord of the Dance, a lot of what's going on in there.
All right, so if you want to listen to that, you're going to have to go back into the MERS archives exactly a year ago today, and you can hear Lauren pound it out on our hardwood floors here.
Indeed, indeed. And I did not do it this year, but it's a, you know, I guess if people really want to see me, there is a fundraiser coming up in May for my Irish dance school. Put that information out there if you're really interested.
All right. Well, you're going to have to remind us because I forget what's happening Thursday, let alone in May.
I understand. Me too.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Until next time, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.